whom the king was worshipped only as a figurehead. But everyone believed that she held the great power passed on from that ancient creator civilization. She was the perpetual guardian of the Abyss Gazers and the homeworld, and had rescued her people from multiple crises. Singer recalled the storied glory of the king when she had ridden forth at the head of the homeworld's army to pacify the fringe world's rebellion. There was a song about it. Daughter of the Creator, King of Hosts, the star cloud is her battle cape. Long membrane waves are her feelers. Like superstrings, she plucks all creation. She kneads the cosmos into dark matter and tosses it into the eternal shadow of the abyss. But the king in front of him wasn't so terrifying. The curious singer asked, "Forgive my presumptuousness, my king, but the creator's issue that this mysterious low-entropy entity is in search of, isn't that us?" The king shuddered, but the flaring light around her indicated anxiety rather than rage. She had apparently been thinking the same thing.
"I don't know," said the king. "Perhaps the low-entropy entity is something we cannot understand at all."
Singer had to think for a moment to understand the king's meaning. He felt shaken to the root of his soul. "If the low-entropy entity really is an envoy from the exiled god of death,
then it is looking for us," said the king.
Singer could think of nothing to say.
"I don't know why I'm telling you this, Elder Singer," said the king. "But it doesn't matter. The secret will die with you. I've kept this secret for 1,300,000,000 time grains. I don't want to keep it any longer."
Singer saw that the protective holy flames around the king had grown even weaker. This meant that her life force was weakening. She was growing to be more like just a common pliant. A pliant he could love. Singer suppressed the disrespectful thought and listened to the king's story.
"The war between the exiled god of death and the creator wasn't a myth. Rather, it was a true history that happened before the birth of our people. The star abyss itself was the remnant of a great battle. In order to escape slaughter at the hand of the exiled god of death, the creator hid in the living sea near the star abyss. But the creator was too weak and could only live for a few million more time grains, which was why he created the Abyss Gazers. We're not the descendants of the creator, but his creation. As soon as we had evolved primitive intelligence, the creator taught us civilization and technology and made me king. And after that, the creator died. I am not the daughter of a god, and I did not come back to life after 3 days. Like you, Singer, I was once just an ordinary individual, a pliant like any other. But the creator picked me and gave me an incorruptible body and an indomitable spirit. I had only one mission, protecting the homeworld. The homeworld is a gigantic machine made by the creator, which disguises incredible mechanisms and power capable of surveilling and detecting the exiled god of death's attempts at wreaking vengeance in the universe. As soon as it detects the exiled god of death casting the ultimate spell, the machine will be able to trace the god's death palace. At that time, the entire star abyss and the 20 star clouds around it will be converted into pure energy and projected beyond our universe to destroy the exiled god's death palace."
"Heavens!" exclaimed Singer. "I had no idea that the homeworld possessed such powerful technology."
Singer well knew what it meant to convert the star clouds into energy. It would be enough to destroy everything between the homeworld and his seed, even if a distance of 40 billion structures separated them.
This isn't technology developed by our own species, but an automatic mechanism constructed by the Creator himself. If the exiled god casts her ultimate death spell, everything will be triggered automatically without any action from us. Our only purpose is to protect the homeworld. That was why the Creator endowed us with enough power to dominate the universe. The ancient myths emphasize this point repeatedly.
But doesn't such an arrangement draw attention to the homeworld? Asked a puzzled singer.
The universe is full of life and civilization. The Abyss Gazers are but one of innumerable civilizations, and no one would have paid any attention to us absent our error of expanding too quickly. For the last few hundred million time grains, we called ourselves the Creator's people, and we expanded everywhere, cleansing all civilizations that stood in our way, until our feelers extended to half a universe away, justifying our actions under the guise of better concealing the homeworld. In doing so, we failed to hide ourselves well. I also forgot my own mission. After putting down the rebellion from the fringe world, I arrogantly believed that the Creator would forever protect us. This is why we have been divinely punished.
Singer didn't know what to say. In the end, he simply said, "But that mysterious low-entropy entity must still not know the secret you're keeping."
It was able to find those myths and songs of antiquity,
the king said, her voice full of sorrow.
If it truly is an envoy from the exiled god, it shouldn't be difficult for it to decipher the truth behind the myths. Even if it doesn't know the true purpose of the Abyss Gazers, it won't let us go. Many are saying that the low entropy entity has already left, but I know that's not true. The havoc wreaked by the first assault was simply to allow it to get to our data. The real attack hasn't come yet. It's just a matter of time.
And time was running out as the next time strand approached. Suddenly, Singer experienced an odd sensation, as though something invisible and insubstantial had permeated his body. An Abyss Gazer's instinct told him that it was no illusion, but a real change in the physical environment, though he couldn't tell what the change was. He saw the king struggling to stand up, but abruptly the wall behind her collapsed. The bright figure of the king vanished. She was buried under a pile of rubble. Singer cried out in alarm.
"No!"
Struggling, he tried to crawl toward the king, but a massive stone tree fell in front of him, separating him from her. Sounds of alarm rang out all around, indicating that disaster had struck the whole city. Abruptly, Singer felt his body become weightless and float off, but the next moment it fell back heavily against the ground. He heard pitiable cries fill the air, and the whole palace grounds tilted, causing his vessel body to roll into a corner. Pain racked him as he came to understand that the earth-bearing turtle that carried the thousand-dimension palace on its back had died. Like many other low-entropy entities on the homeworld, earth-bearing turtles were both living beings and intelligent machines. The gigantic creatures were basic units in the structures of homeworld cities. In the distant past, the Abyss Gazers had ridden them and wandered all over the homeworld in search of suitable places to settle. Today, their movements were controlled by the Universal Core, and they would never fall without warning. Although the Thousand Dimension Palace appeared as a classical building constructed out of stone trees, it had been thoroughly modified by the Universal Core so that every load-bearing joint was constantly monitored. It was inconceivable for living walls to collapse or column trees to suddenly topple, and if such an accident did happen, protective force fields would immediately engage and contain the damage. But after the last assault, the intelligent systems had been knocked out of commission. The homeworld, which had been protected in the hothouse of super-advanced technology for hundreds of millions of time grains, was now forced to endure the pain of earthquakes, like the worlds inhabited by primitive species.
An earthquake. Impossible.
There had never been an earthquake on the homeworld, because it didn't have tectonic plates or a liquid mantle. Singer now knew that the homeworld was a massive machine left by the Creator. Could its interior have suffered catastrophic damage? Singer felt himself pressed against the ground by some heavy force and could not get up. Even the basic motions necessary to sustain life felt extremely difficult. He could sense his own life field issuing the highest alert for danger. Just then, a balance bird gave out a grievous cry and fell out of the sky, landing next to him, unable to move its wings. Before he could react, a swarm of matrix insects fell and skittered over the ground. They struggled to open their wings and buzzed, but couldn't take off. Singer lifted his gaze to the sky. Every flying creature was falling, like a rain of stars. Singer could leave his vessel body at any time and return to the Star Plucker's star cloud, 40 billion structures away, where none of these forces ravaging the homeworld would be able to injure him. But he didn't want to leave because the king was here. He struggled to look in her direction, but the fallen stone tree was in the way. A silver streak flashed. An out-of-control seed swept out of the sky, falling straight at him. Singer thought the seed was going to crash into the altar, but the seed exploded overhead in a burst of blinding white light. The fiery, expanding wreckage, like a blooming dragon-eater flower, threatened to swallow him. But then the conflagration vanished. The Thousand-Dimension Palace's protective field was still in operation. Singer tried to calm his terrified organ of cogitation, but he was surrounded by the barrage of collapsing buildings and the screams of dying abyss gazers. An invisible enemy was attacking. Singer didn't know what weapon he was using or where the enemy was. It was an apocalyptic scene. For some reason, he thought of the Star Pluckers. Many time grains ago, when their world sank into the trap of the dual vector foil, did they also feel as helpless and terrorized? The same fate had now befallen the homeworld. Rubble scattered everywhere as a bright, colorful beam of light shot heavenward, and the figure of the king rose into the air like an immortal goddess. Gently, she landed next to the singer.
Are you all right?
A column of holy fire shot out of her and struck Singer. It wrapped around his body, and he felt the oppressive weight sloughing off. He stood up effortlessly.
Anti-gravity, she said, smiling at him.
Once again, Singer felt full of strength and joy. The king had not fallen. She was still fighting. There was hope for the homeworld.
My king, what happened? Have the world engines been engaged? Are we leaving the shore of the Star Abyss? Singer asked.
Now that he had had a chance to calm down, he finally figured out why he had been unable to get up from the ground, why the palace walls and the stone trees had toppled, and why the flying beasts and insects had fallen down. It was because the homeworld's engines had been activated to accelerate somewhere. It was said that the homeworld had the power to accelerate to the absolute limit speed within a short period of time. Typically, the world would never accelerate without giving some warning or taking protective measures, but this was a crisis. Still, if the homeworld was about to change course, why had the king seemed not to know about it? The king's feelers flickered in denial.
I don't think that's possible. We can't depart the Star Abyss. Otherwise, the countermeasures against the exiled god of death would be rendered ineffective. This was the most important directive from the Creator. Could the Council of Elders have decided to do this? But they don't have the authority to turn on the world engines. Unless...
Singer thought of another possibility. An extremely massive object had suddenly appeared on the other side of the homeworld, and the homeworld was falling into its gravity well. The world engines would be activated in such an emergency to ensure that the homeworld didn't deviate from its orbit. This would also be manifested in a sudden increase in gravity on the surface of the homeworld.
But what could such an object be? A sun? A massive planet?
Singer could not imagine what force would be capable of suddenly moving a gigantic heavenly body behind the homeworld, past the layers of advanced warning systems around the homeworld that extended several structures into space. Just imagining the homeworld sinking into the fiery flames of a sun made Singer's body stiffen with terror.
There's no need to be afraid.
The king sensed the agitation in his organ of cogitation and tried to comfort him.
Even if the sudden increase in gravity came from a giant sun nearby, the homeworld's automatic protection systems would be able to snuff it out like a chemical flame within a single time strand.
The king turned to the altar and asked,
"Universal Core, what is this new gravity source?"
A bright, simulated sphere of flames appeared above the altar.
"I have not detected any new gravity source."
The king and Singer stared at each other. The king said,
"Impossible. The gravity on the homeworld has increased by at least a factor of 10. Have the world engines been activated?"
"No. You're the only one with the authority to start the world engines, my king."
"Then, what is happening?"
"I apologize," said the Universal Core. "These conditions are unprecedented. I am currently trying to gather the data from 2,400,000 monitoring points on the homeworld and around it. I hope to have the results of my analysis soon."
The wait that followed was almost maddening. At last, the flames of the Universal Core jumped, indicating that it had the results.
"My king, preliminary analysis indicates that we are the target of a physical law alteration strike. The epicenter is at star abyss coordinate 142.522.624.713.64.214, and the affected region is a sphere 1.43 structures in diameter centered around that point. Within the targeted region, all gravitons have been stimulated by unknown high-energy particles to increase their rate of rotation, resulting in the local gravitational constant changing from 31.772 to 381.213, about a 12-fold increase."
"A fundamental physical constant has been altered?"
At first, Singer wasn't sure what this meant. But it at least seemed to be better than having a massive heavenly body suddenly materialize behind the homeworld, or being the victim of a dimension reduction attack. As long as they had the protection of anti-gravity, it shouldn't be a big deal. But Singer was surprised by the odd expression in the king's presentation pose. It looked simultaneously like shock and like tranquility, as though inescapable despair had paradoxically given her peace. Singer knew something was wrong. Gingerly, he asked,
"My king? What does this mean?"
The king remained mute. Singer repeated his question. The king extended her feelers helplessly and pointed at the sky. Singer looked up. All the flying creatures and flying machines had fallen. There was nothing up there except the star abyss.
"But the star abyss. Oh, Creator."
Singer understood. Simple physics equations dictated that the gravitational constant was directly proportional to the collapse radius of the star abyss. If the gravitational constant increased 12 times, then the star abyss's collapse radius would also grow by a factor of 12, which would now extend beyond the orbit of the homeworld.
"The homeworld is going to fall into the star abyss." "No. Not going to fall, but has already fallen."
The homeworld was already within the collapse radius of the star abyss. It was going to sink rapidly and inexorably into the bottom of absolute darkness. The homeworld had 120,000 space engines. With all of them in operation, the homeworld could approach the absolute limit speed within a very brief period of time, sufficient to escape any conventional attack. But this was of no use now. Even if they achieved absolute limit speed right away, they wouldn't be able to escape the star abyss. The collapse radius marked the boundary within which even long and short membranes, which traveled at the absolute limit speed, could not escape. The homeworld had been swallowed by the star abyss. This was the true assault by the mysterious low-entropy entity. It gave the homeworld no opportunity to resist. The king and Singer entwined their feelers, comforting each other. In this instant, they were no longer ruler and subject, divided by an unbridgeable gulf in rank, no longer strangers separated by billions of structures in distance, but only an ordinary Indurit and an ordinary Pliant, facing desperate straits together. In the dark space far above the thousand-dimension palace, a door limned by a faint rectangular glow opened. The angel who brought death upon the homeworld appeared in the door. He was drifting in space, as though unaffected by gravity. Silently, expressionlessly, he watched the homeworld below him turn into a hellscape of flames. He was not proud of what he had done, but neither did he experience any guilt. An envoy from this world had once destroyed his homeworld, and now he had destroyed it in return. This was fair. It wasn't vengeance. It was fate. Life required death, and destruction gave rise to rebirth. Everything was going to recur along the same paths. Billions and billions of years later, this world would reappear once more and repeat its long and glorious history. Prosperity and dream, love and conspiracy, democracy and science, war and death. The same as what had already happened. The same as every other world. The same. That same moment, 2.5 structures away. There was a tiny, inconspicuous patch of interstellar dust floating beyond the border of the star abyss world, not too far from the thousands of interstellar routes filled with traffic of the abyss gazers, who considered the dust cloud a useless wasteland. There were bits of dark matter hidden within the dust, but the quantity was minuscule. No one thought there was anything worth digging for in the dust patch, and if they did try to dig, they'd find nothing. However, there was indeed something deep within the dark matter in the dust. The reminder stimulus activated. One dot, two dots, then the third dot. That meant a level 3 alarm. Something big had happened. A long dormant cognition field awakened. It took a long time before the cognition field understood what had happened. It turned to a second cognition field.
2012, wake up. Come see this.
Listen, 2046, how many times have I told you? Unless it's that thing, don't wake me up.
You idiot. I'm telling you that thing has happened. The thing we've been waiting for 30,000 grand years.
The cognition field let out a sensing filament. The information returned was so incredible that the cognition field had to reconfirm the result. It was true. The sensing fields, the cognition fields, the energy fields. Everything was coming back to life. Excitement flashed throughout the dust cloud.
My dear, now we are going to get the show of countless lifetimes.
That same moment, within the collapse radius of the star abyss. The king did not give in to despair. She let go of Singer's feelers and issued an order to the Universal Core.
All space engines to maximum. Head away from the star abyss. It is possible that our enemy's power is limited, and this state of increased gravitational constant will not last long. We still have a chance.
We lost 55,144 engines during the initial assault, reported the Universal Corps. Insufficient power.
With a bitter smile, the king quoted an ancient proverb.
A dead balance bird is easy to cure.
I will carry out your order instantly, said the Universal Corps.
The homeworld space engines rumbled to life. The ground shook as the world struggled above the abyss like a curvature fish flapping in a too shallow puddle, striving to gain a few more moments against its inevitable doom. But the Universal Corps had already computed the precise moment of the homeworld's destruction.
The space engines have sufficient power to maintain state for another 18.53 time nodes. The homeworld will then begin to accelerate toward the abyss, and in another 22.12 nodes, reach the fragmentation limit and be torn apart by tidal forces.
In other words, if the local gravitational constant wasn't restored within approximately 40 time nodes, the homeworld would be annihilated. The king and Singer both understood that their terrifying enemy had probably accounted for every eventuality and given them no chance of escaping this trap. But they still had to try. The Universal Corps reported to the king that the surface of the homeworld had descended into complete chaos, and representatives from the Council of Elders, the Executive Council, the Military Council, and the Assembly, as well as officials of every rank, were clamoring for an audience with her. The king denied all requests and wearily said to the Universal Corps,
I have little desire to spend my last few hours in the company of politicians. Besides, what is there to talk about?
But it is your duty to comfort and encourage your subjects.
I have performed my duty for 1.3 billion time grains. I think I have earned the right to rest in the fraction of a grain left. In fact, why don't you rest as well?
I will carry out your order instantly, said the Universal Corps.
The Universal Corps vanished, and tranquility returned to the thousand-dimension palace. But the screams and howls of the people continued to filter into the palace from the distant ruins of the city. Impatiently, the king waved her hands, and the gesture seemed to activate some kind of noise-canceling mechanism as the pitiable cries of the people faded. Singer gazed at the king, terrified. He wasn't scared of death, but of the possibility that the king might force him to leave so that she could face death alone. The king remembered his presence. Turning to him, she said,
The homeworld is about to be destroyed. You should go. At least you're still safe.
Indeed, as soon as he left the vessel body, Singer would return to the star cloud 40 billion structures away. Even if the homeworld collapsed into a singularity, it wouldn't affect him. Singer shook his head.
It's all the same. I was about to be two-dimensionalized by those bugs. I'd rather die here than far away at the edge of the known universe. I feel fortunate, as a subject, that I get to welcome my death by the side of my sovereign. Please grant me the honor of staying with you, my king.
The king nodded and smiled at him.
It's good to have you as my companion.
Singer was filled with such overwhelming joy that his voice-making organ stammered, unable to produce a suitable response. The king asked,
Do you know why I'm letting you stay?
Singer's presentation pose showed ignorance. The king chuckled.
Because I saw in your organ of cogitation that you like singing old songs. Isn't that right?
Forgive me, said an embarrassed singer. It's a silly habit.
Not at all. I like it. Some of the songs you like were passed down from the era of my birth. Few people alive now know how to sing them. Could you sing one of them for me?
I'm afraid that my rough oscillation organ would be an insult to your heavenly ears.
Please don't be self-conscious. I like the music made by an Indurit voice. Most Indurits don't like to sing. But that makes you special.
All right. I will do my best. Which song would you like to hear?
You pick.
Singer pondered for a while, and then selected the song he was most familiar with out of his organ of recall.
I see my love. I fly next to her. I present her with my gift, a small piece of solidified time. Lovely markings are carved into time, as soft to the touch as the mud in shallow sea.
Slowly, Singer's voice faded and then stopped. The king's intense gaze seemed odd to him.
What's wrong, my king? Did I sing it wrong?
No, you didn't sing it wrong at all. It's just that I wrote the words of this song.
You are the author?
Singer was astonished.
No. The song came from the Creator's revelation, said the king. The Creator implanted the ideas for the song into my organ of cogitation in the form of extremely complex, profound idea figures. I just recorded the most accessible parts with our written language. Superficially, what I wrote down is just a love song, but I'm certain that the revelation contains important messages, though I don't know how to decode them. What do you think?
I don't know either, confessed Singer. I've always been baffled by solidified time, for example. I thought at first maybe it was a kenning popular in ancient times, but whose meaning has become obscured down the ages.
No,
the king said with absolute certainty.
This was not some ancient metaphor whose tenor has been lost. Solidified time came directly from the Creator's oracle. There's no mistake. Keep on singing, Elder. Perhaps we can discover some significance together.
Singer continued.
She paints herself with time and pulls me to fly together to the edge of existence in a spiritual flight. The stars appear as ghosts in our sight. We appear as ghosts in the stars' sight.
When Singer used to sing this song, his organ of cogitation had always been filled with a sense of sweet sorrow. But now that he knew that the words of the song represented a mystery dictated by the Creator, Singer was hearing them in an entirely new light. Every word seemed to be the locus of countless competing esoteric interpretations.
Solidified time. Spiritual flight. Stars appear as ghosts.
Singer's organ of cogitation trembled.
My king, if this poem really represents the Creator's truth, then I think it's possible that... No, forget it. It's too absurd.
Tell me your theory, Elder. What can be more absurd than what is already happening to us?
All right.
Singer tried to sort out his thoughts.
I think it's possible to read the poem as an extended metaphor. I refers to the Creator. My love refers to our universe. Solidified time is the gift the Creator gave us. The Creator solidified time, gave it shape, and endowed the universe with it.
The king's seven eyes grew very wide, indicating that she was concentrating. After some time, she looked up into the sky.
Did you hear that, Universal Core? What do you think? Can time be solidified?
The Universal Core came back to life immediately.
Since this is a metaphor, it can be interpreted in many ways. But if we restrict the domain to physics, time solidification can be read as a description of the dimensionalization of time. In other words, it was the process by which time became time.
Isn't time fundamentally a dimension?
Asked the king.
No. Time itself is not a dimension, but a form of energy distribution. Scientists had long since realized that the dimensionalization of time is a compensation for the universe's dimensional differential.
What's dimensional differential?
The only balanced state for the universe is in 10 dimensions. When the number of dimensions has been reduced below that, the curling up of certain dimensions into the quantum realm ruptures the balance between matter and energy and leads to the mutual annihilation of particles and antiparticles. The disturbance in the total energy in the universes leads to the separation of energy and gravity, which must be balanced by the transformation of time.
Singer did not seem convinced by this explanation, and the king looked just as baffled. The Universal Core went on.
Scientists believe that the universe's initial state is 10-dimensional, but it is in the process of collapsing into ever fewer dimensions. Each collapse leads to a dramatic imbalance between matter and energy, leading to space constantly expanding in the remaining dimensions. Since energy is unevenly distributed in the expanded universe, the high-entropy universe becomes low-entropy, which leads to directed transformation going from a low-entropy state back to a high-entropy state. This is the meaning of time.
Are you saying that there was no time in the 10-dimensional universe?
Singer asked.
That is not an easy question to answer. The 10-dimensional universe was changeless, and so it could be described as lasting but an instant or for eternity. All we can say is that it had no time as we understand the concept.
As Singer thought over the Universal Core's ideas, his organ of cogitation flashed with bursts of light. Then he cried out to the Universal Core.
Then the Creator made time, and it gave time to us. Am I right?
This is a guess without any scientific basis, said the Universal Core dryly. I can offer no useful response.
But then the explanation is obvious. The purpose of time is to bring us to the edge of existence, which is just another way to describe the unceasing process of dimension reduction in the universe. This is the meaning behind the spiritual flight.
Singer was excited that the lyrics that had resisted his understanding for so long yielded such profound meanings.
What about the two lines about ghosts and stars?
Asked the king. Since the Universal Core was no expert at literary interpretation, it remained silent.
It seems to be a description of spaceflight, but something about it doesn't feel quite...
Singer hesitated, but then his organ of cogitation flashed again.
The ghost imagery suggests something that is visible, but insubstantial. Everything in the universe is subject to the absolute limit speed. To fly from any star cloud to any other star cloud requires at least hundreds of millions of time grains, and even flying from one star to another often takes more time than is allotted to one life. For most low-entropy entities I've encountered, the stars are untouchable ghosts, and the intelligent species themselves, carefully hidden from the stars, are also ghosts to the inhabitants of other worlds. Everything is divided from everything else by vast gulfs of time and space. If you think about it, out of the billions and billions of worlds in each star cloud, most will live and die in obscurity without our knowledge at all, and most of them will never know anything about us either. We and the rest of the universe are mired in time.
But the condition you describe is a consequence of the absolute limit speed and has nothing to do with time,
said the king.
Indeed, the situation may be said to be the result of there being too little time in the universe.
Singer thought this made sense, and wondered if his own speculation had veered too far off the right path.
I'm not so sure about that, my king, said the Universal Core. Theory suggests that the absolute limit speed and time are intimately connected. With the loss of each dimension by the universe, due to the expansion of space-time, the absolute limit speed seems to go down by an order of magnitude or two, while time simultaneously increases by multiple orders of magnitude. Although Elder Singer's explanation is not subject to proof, it is at least self-consistent.
The king and Singer gazed at each other in wonder. Somehow, the grand mystery of the stars had been unveiled before them. The Creator gave the universe time. Time not only brought change and progress, but also gave low-entropy entities existence. Time and the absolute limit speed are two sides of the same blade that divided the universe, isolating most species of low-entropy entities and their civilizations in tiny corners of the vast cosmos. It was impossible for most to understand the true mystery of the world, and the madness of preemptive slaughter for the sake of survival became the norm. But in some sense, the condition in the universe was a kind of mercy. The darkness of space was a cloak for the protection of the weak. It meant that it was possible for those we loved to conceal and hide, rather than to lie exposed to the enemy's strikes. Time was the Creator's greatest gift. Time gave rise to life and everything that accompanied it. Time frustrated the ambition of tyrants who wished to conquer the universe and ground them into dust, and gave countless embryonic civilizations the space necessary to evolve and flourish. The only things sacrificed on the altar of time were dimensions and the exiled god of death. If Guan Yifan, who was at this moment enjoying a bucolic life with Cheng Xin in the mini-universe Yun Tianming left for them, could hear this song and understand its meaning, he would have understood that what he termed the universe's 3 and 300,000 syndrome was in fact a blessing for the cosmos.
Universal Core, why couldn't you have decoded the important hidden message in this song earlier?
The king's voice was tinged with anger.
I haven't decoded anything,
the Universal Core said patiently.
I'm simply providing some scientific support for the interpretation offered by Elder Singer. You know very well that scientists have no interest in such ancient songs and would never have connected the songs with any scientific mystery.
Oh, but if we had understood the songs much earlier, then perhaps... perhaps...
The king could not continue. Dejected, she shrugged her feelers.
Forget it. Even if we had known the meaning earlier, we couldn't have done anything with the information. We could not have stopped the Angel of Death.
No, Singer said. Even if the answer to the riddle of the song can't help us escape our fate now, it still tells us something significant.
And what's that?
My king, time is the Creator's gift. Time made our rich and varied existence and society possible. But we had to pay a price for this gift. To be bound up in time. We had to submit to death and destruction. From the coddled interior of an eternal existence, we were pulled to the edge, where we must live and die in time. We are neither of existence nor of non-existence, but always in a state of growth and change, ending with death.
The king smiled painfully.
I think you're right. There was a time when I thought the Creator had given me eternal life. But only now do I understand that the purpose of my life is to witness the destruction of the homeworld. The Creator must have known this day would come, because he understood that everything must die in the universe. Look, even the Creator has drowned in the river of time. Why should we be so troubled by our impending death, then? Elder Singer, why not sing some more old songs and see if they also contain answers left by the Creator?
They went through more than a dozen songs passed down from the age of the Creator, and two more songs seemed to contain the same information as the song they had just deciphered. From a few other songs, they managed to recover metaphors describing the 10-dimensional universe as a pool of stagnant water, portrayals of the tragic warfare raging across the universe as it lost dimension after dimension, and reflections on the divergent civilizations of the Creator and the Abyss Gazers. The rest of the songs no doubt held important information as well, but no matter how much they tried, the king and singer could not decipher them and had to give up in the end.
How much time is left, Universal Core?
The king asked as she lifted her feelers.
11.32 time nodes.
The king laughed.
So soon? Ever since the Creator made my body incorruptible, I've never felt time pass so quickly.
As fast as the blooming of stardust flowers, Singer sang, a line from an old song.
And love's half-life,
the king sang, the next line. Singer was about to say something when the king turned to the Universal Core and spoke first.
It's time. We should abandon all pointless fantasies. Universal Core, please connect me to all reachable big eyes. I will now speak to my subjects on all away worlds and seeds.
Singer realized that somehow, strength and determination had returned to the king. The Big Eye's ability to bridge vast distances instantaneously wasn't affected by the change in the Star Abyss's collapse radius. Otherwise, Singer couldn't have maintained his telepresence in the vessel body. Nonetheless, the Universal Core issued a warning to the king.
This requires complex multi-state tele-entanglement. Given that we have over 100,000 away worlds and 30 million seeds, that means more than 200 million big eyes need to be connected. This will present an immense drain on our energy, and the Universal Core may stop working at any time.
I must carry out my duty, said the king calmly. As must you.
I will carry out your order instantly.
The Universal Core flashed through a constantly shifting spectrum of colors as it operated at maximum capacity. A few moments later, the king walked onto the half-collapsed altar. Holy fire in 12 colors sheathed her unsullied form, lifting her high into the air. Singer gazed up at the rising figure of the king and saw a silvery sphere appear around her. This meant that the big eyes were in operation. A three-dimensional projection of the king was instantaneously being broadcast to every corner of the universe where abyss gazers lived. At this moment, the inhabitants of the away worlds did not yet know what had happened.
My noble abyss gazers!
The king's greeting was without any trace of fear or despair, but also without any melodrama. It was strong and calm. Only Singer understood the torrents of emotion under her tranquil exterior.
I am your king, and this will be the last time I speak to you. The apocalypse predicted by our ancient epics has come true. We have been struck by an unknown physical law alteration strike. The local gravitational constant near the star abyss has been increased 12-fold, which means that the homeworld and I are now falling into the star abyss and cannot escape. We will be destroyed in little more than 10 time nodes.
Although Singer could not see what was happening on the other worlds, he could imagine that on thousands of prosperous, peaceful worlds, countless compatriots were seized by extreme terror and pain. The emotion organs were on the verge of collapse, as the abyss gazers were lost in helpless confusion. But the next pronouncement from the king shocked them even more.
Do not lament us, my fellow abyss gazers. The destruction of the homeworld is insignificant compared with what is about to happen next. The life of the whole universe is at an end.
In the darkness among the stars, the Angel of Death quietly observed this farewell speech, as though nothing in the cosmos could break his calm demeanor. Still, his eyes flashed at these words from the king.
The riddle has been answered. The Lurker has revealed itself.
But the Angel of Death did not know that behind him, not too far away, two more mysterious observers were also following the proceedings avidly.
For eons, the king continued, I have protected the universe's greatest secret alone. But it is now time to reveal everything. Abyss gazers, you have the right to know. The universe has the right to know. You all know the legend from ancient times. The god of death had once reigned over primeval chaos, and the creator rebelled and exiled his mother and created the world of forms. I tell you now that the legend was true. From the age of gods, the war between the god of death and the creator has never stopped. In that war, our universe collapsed by stages from 10 dimensions to 3. Each time, the creator stopped the god of death's attempt to destroy the universe, but was also weakened in the process. In the early days of the 3-dimensional universe, the creator and the god of death engaged in what they thought of as a final contest. The god of death was defeated once more and escaped out of the universe, leaving behind only a single avatar. But the creator didn't win either. He died soon after. Our universe thus lost its sole protector and lay exposed to the gaze of the exiled god of death. Fortunately, the creator made our world before his death. He left us his final directive and a countermeasure against the god of death. We, the Abyss Gazers, are his heirs, protecting the universe in the creator's stead. That's right. We can trace our lineage to the beginning of time. We're the children of the gods. The homeworld is the countermeasure left by the creator. As long as the homeworld exists, if the exiled god of death tries to release the death spell, her death palace will be destroyed, and the exiled god herself will be erased from existence. Because of the homeworld, the universe has been safe for more than 1 billion time grains. The only power in the universe capable of destroying the homeworld is the exiled god of death. She knows of the existence of the homeworld, but she doesn't know the location. For hundreds of millions of time grains, she sent numerous envoys across the universe in search of the homeworld. All of them have failed until this last one, who has found us and breached our data bank. And so, we shall die. I do not despair over our loss, my fellow Abyss Gazers, and neither should you. This is a war where mere mortals dare to challenge a god. That supreme power and intelligence, originating in the 10-dimensional universe, is capable of collapsing the universe as well as re-expanding it. How can we be expected to contest such power? More important, we have maintained our civilization for more than 1.3 billion time grains and defended the homeworld throughout that time, protecting the whole universe. Any species should be proud of such an achievement. More than 1.3 billion time grains ago, the Creator left me a message. However, I didn't understand its meaning until now. I hope to share the message with you now, in my final moments. The Creator brought forth time and gave the universe life. From that moment on, everything in the universe was doomed to be lost in the vastness of space-time, and with time's passage, corrupted. We are no exceptions. Even if our lives were extended for 100 billion more time grains, we'd still have to face death one day. With our death, the universe will not last much longer on a cosmic scale. My people, you will likely spend the remainder of your lifetimes in peace, and perhaps so will your children. Tens of thousands of time grains may still lie ahead of you. I wish you all to remember that time is a precious gift from the Creator. Don't waste it. Everything ultimately will return to nothingness, but you must enjoy every time grain, every time node, every time strand. That is the true meaning of life. The Creator endowed civilization with time, but we gave time the gift of civilization.
The king still wanted to speak a few more words, but the Universal Core reminded her that the homeworld's energy supply was nearing exhaustion. She was running out of time. She ended her speech with a common phrase that brought heartbreak and anguish to all low-entropy entities, all civilized species, and all mortals and gods in the cosmos.
Farewell, then, for the last time.
The king's image disappeared from Big Eyes across the universe. All abyss gazers everywhere sank into sorrow, terror, and despair. In the darkness on the other side of the homeworld, the Angel of Death shook his head and sighed.
2046. She's really something, isn't she?
One of the two observers in the dark matter exclaimed.
Indeed. I've always admired and loved her,
the other said after a beat. Their energy supplies depleted. The world engines shut off. The lights over the homeworld dimmed. Like a will-o'-the-wisp, the homeworld drifted toward the ocean of darkness. Inside the thousand-dimension palace, the silvery sphere vanished like a popped bubble. Like a periodic swan, the king gracefully landed. Singer and the king gazed at each other with their multiple pairs of eyes. It was so quiet that even the whispers of the stardust blossoms could be heard.
Thank you, Elder Singer, said the king.
Singer looked confused, and so the king explained.
I'm grateful for your interpretation of the ancient songs. You have released me from the heaviest burden of guilt in the universe. For 1.3 billion time grains, I've dreaded the arrival of this moment. But now that it's here, I'm not afraid at all. 300 million time grains ago, during the terrible war between the homeworld and the fringe world, I made the difficult decision of rejecting the plan to two-dimensionalize. At the time, many protested my choice, and the voices of opposition didn't subside until the defeat of the fringe world. One of the reasons behind my choice was our civilization's mission, to defend and preserve the homeworld. Two-dimensionalization would have destroyed the homeworld, and I could not take such a step. This was why my heart was in ashes when the gravitational strike from the Angel of Death occurred. Had we entered two dimensions, perhaps none of this would have happened. I thought it was my fault. But your explanation made me realize that the Creator did not make us so that we could merely survive forever, but so that we could enjoy each time node and face death with tranquility. As long as we keep that in mind, it doesn't matter if we live for a single time grain or 10 billion.
No, it is I who should thank you, said an excited singer. I'm utterly disgusted by the idea of living in two dimensions. The very thought of living a single day in a flat world makes me suffocate. Even a prisoner gets to have a space to live in. But we would have been imprisoned in an infinitely thin plane. We would have forgotten even the existence of another dimension. What a tragedy!
Do you really think so?
The king was moved by Singer's display of emotion.
I felt the same way, but the other elders and the generals did not understand me. I should have made you Prime Minister.
It's not too late. I could be recorded in history as the last Prime Minister of our people.
Oh, but that's impossible. The appointment would require the consent of the Council of Elders and the Assembly, and there's no time for that now. I suppose you'll have to settle for being recorded as the last power-hungry Indurit who plotted to seize the office of the Prime Minister.
They laughed together. Though laughter for the Abyss Gazers consisted only of body movements expressing joy, a harmonious dance of swaying feelers. After a while, the king said,
Singer, let's sing that old song together one more time, shall we?
Singer noticed that the king was calling his name without the title of elder.
Let's do it, my king.
Oh, stop that. I have carried out my last duty as the king. Call me by my name. Red.
All right, Red.
Singer did not feel odd calling his sovereign by her name. After all, before death, everyone and everything was equal. And so, together in harmony, they sang that song from time immemorial, a song that perhaps had been devised by the Creator from countless universes before this one, from the time before the cosmos had time.
I see my love.
I fly next to her.
I present her with my gift.
A small piece of solidified time.
Lovely markings are carved into time.
As soft to the touch as the mud in the shallow sea.
She paints herself with time.
And pulls me to fly together to the edge of existence
in a spiritual flight.
The stars appear as ghosts in our sight.
We appear as ghosts in the stars' sight.
Singer heard the king's voice, cool yet passionate, like a burning comet, like a frozen solar corona, as distant as a river of stars, as melancholy as a cooling star fog, as moving as the love that he had never had. Singing for the abyss gazers consisted of the oscillation of a particular kind of electromagnetic wave, which the abyss gazers called primitive membrane. They could hear with their eyes the actual waveforms that made up their song. Singer saw that the king's warbling voice was transforming the light in the space around her into a shimmering lake of mercury, and the notes fell into the lake like drizzling raindrops, producing overlapping concentric ripples. The ripples from the king's song collided with the ripples from his, and the notes reinforced each other, merged into each other.
Maybe these are the lovely markings carved into time, thought Singer. And maybe they're on the spiritual flight now, the flight to the edge of existence, to the star abyss.
The moment of destruction was at hand. As tidal forces overwhelmed the structural integrity of the homeworld, a massive interior explosion broke it apart. Suspended in midair and protected by the last remnants of the holy flames, the king and singer watched helplessly as long cracks and fissures ripped through the land beneath them, merged into massive canyons, and then cleft the ground shell of the world, to reveal the massive, intricate interior machinery. The mysterious, gigantic mechanisms unveiled to their eyes were incomprehensible, unimaginable, but also now meaningless. The countermeasure mechanism had been destroyed, and there was now no force in the universe that could resist the return of the exiled god of death. A storm caused by the air escaping the interior of the world seized Singer and the king and lifted them high into the sky, from where the stunned pair watched the apocalyptic scene playing out far beneath them.
Singer, I'm afraid.
The king pressed herself against Singer and unveiled her organ of cogitation to him. They now communicated by passing thoughts directly to each other.
What do you think is inside the star abyss? Is it a dark hellscape where all matter is compressed to a density impossible to imagine?
No. Maybe we'll find a warp point inside, leading to another space-time, another universe.
Do you really believe that? Will we head to another universe?
No one has ever gone to that universe, and so I don't know. But there is an ancient song that I remember. Outside this universe, there are 9 other universes. This life is at an end, but no one knows about the life to come.
It's lovely, but I've never heard this song before.
It's not a song from the traditions of our people. I discovered it in the databanks of the Star Pluckers. It's about a king of the Star Pluckers, and his yearning for his dead lover.
Their king also loved someone?
That's right. Their king was just like an ordinary individual. He lived, he died, he loved, he raged.
As they conversed, Singer sank into the king's organ of cogitation and lost himself in the intoxicating embrace of another, unfamiliar but also welcoming consciousness. The king pressed herself into Singer's organ of cogitation and felt the presence of her own thoughts in the thoughts of the other. The organs of cogitation entwined themselves, and as the pair trembled, they completed the oldest ritual of expressing love among the abyss gazers and became one. A part of Singer's consciousness reminded him that back in the star cloud where his true body was located, his seed had used up its last bit of power. The dual vector foil launched by the descendants of the Star Pluckers was dragging his body into the expanding plane of death. His death in that world was probably going to come even faster than his death in this one.
"That's all right," he thought.
And he extended all his feelers to embrace even more tightly the king, who was immersed in the joy of a love that had arrived too late. At that moment, the Angel of Death still observed everything calmly. If he wished, he could rescue that dying world as easily as extending his hand. All he had to do was pull an invisible string, and the local gravitational constant would return to normal. And if he pulled it again, it would become even smaller, asymptotically approaching zero, and then the star abyss would be nothing more than an insignificant hard ball of matter, devoid of fatal attraction. The people from the homeworld could even land on it and jump around. All he had to do was extend his hand. Finally, the Angel of Death made up his mind and extended his left hand, as though grasping for something invisible. A small ball of flame appeared in his palm, which quickly extinguished and turned into something substantial. A tiny transparent glass tumbler filled with a strange green liquid. The Angel of Death admired the glass in his hand. He had recreated the temperature, pressure, gravity, and other conditions of his homeland. He drained the glass in a single gulp and sighed satisfyingly. Then he extended his hand again.
"Give me another green tempest," he muttered. No matter what, this was a day worth celebrating.
Another glass filled with green tempest appeared. But as the Angel of Death reached for it, another hand, feminine,